I feel like I've been seeing quite a few things online lately that essentially say Christianity doesn't know what to do with or how to respond to or what to say about this pandemic. We're going to get to that in due course, but I'm personally not inclined to suddenly abandon the kind of things we enjoy exploring together. And one of the big reasons for that disinclination is because I think that what we've been doing together all along just might be pretty decent equipping for a time like this. When you poke around in questions and uncertainty all the time, the compulsion to serve up tidy answers in the face of disorder is maybe not so strong, you know? And tidy answers really might not feel especially believable right now to some of us, or it might not even feel like what we really need or want. We feel like what we want or need is some sort of open engagement with the things about this that are confounding. In any case, it may be that that's not at all how you feel, and what you really would like is a systemic, here's the right answer, kind of engagement with this, and those are, of course, available, but not necessarily here. So let's just dive in and see where this takes us. My experience with the month of March is that it can't make up its mind. It's moody, it's mercurial, it's all over the place. It's up and it's down. It's cold and then it's warm. It's snowy and then it's thawing. It feels like winter with drifting snow blowing across the road like it does today when I'm recording this on Friday. And then the next day the water's running and you sit on the steps and you feel the sunshine. Now, I do know that March was last month. I'm not so lost at home with, you know, without regular rhythms that I missed the turning of the month. I know it's April. And I know that April is a little more inclined to be determined about being warm. And I'm really looking forward to that. But it seems like maybe we're not quite there yet. And so that moody on again, off again, that still feels like the space that we're in. Now, to the best of my knowledge, I do not suffer from seasonal affective disorder or any kind of related mental health challenges that have to do with the amount of sunlight or with the seasons generally. I hope that if you do, that you're going to feel like the illustrative idea that I want to work with this morning is a useful one, and one that dignifies those challenges while also helping all of us learn something about how our bodies and our minds and our spirits are tied together and how they are connected to the changing seasons. Since we're test driving a new way of viewing these talky bits and interacting with them, you can always take me to task in the comments section if I miss the mark on that. Here's one other piece of information that might feel important to some of you. Eventually in this talky bit, I'm going to work with a few lines from a poem. I promise that you won't have to do any poem analysis. I won't even drag you through it. I'm going to more or less do that for us if that's your thing. I'll point you to where you can find the poem so you can do it on your own time if you have some extra time on your hands. But we're going to get to just work with the images and ideas, just the things that I hope will help us explore what we believe. Now, in particular, I would like to explore some of the ways seasons impact our lives. Not just in the shovel versus mow kind of ways, but in ways that run a bit deeper than that. Now, that said, the idea of seasons as actual physical weather is an important starting point. We've explored before how there are lots of us in this community that have grown up in or around religious perspectives that divorce the body and the spirit, that might even make one the enemy of the other. This whole idea that we have to punish our bodies to free our souls is connected at the source to the idea that our bodies are kind of the root of our spiritual problems. We explored this idea a little bit a few weeks ago when we considered how gloriously dirt-like we are. If our starting point is body bad, spirit potentially salvageable, we're going to have a pretty hard time seeing the possible beautiful breadth of ways our life in our bodies might be connected to something like our life in seasons, and how that's not just okay, but has something really, really deeply good about it. That might sound a little bit vague, so let's see if this helps. At the risk of saying something really obvious, weather affects us. It affects us as whole people. It doesn't just affect our bodies, but it affects that mysterious part of us where our feelings, where our sense of self lives. And we know that a significant part of what we feel can be traced to our brains, but there's also a part of it for which we might use the language of spirit or the spiritual. And so when we say something like winter is hard on us as humans, we're not just talking about our skin feeling a little extra dry or needing some particular vitamins in greater quantities than we would when there's sunshine. We're talking about how we feel. We're talking about feeling depressed, about feeling like we can't go on, about having emotional responses that feel like they catch us unawares, that they come from some place in ourselves that we don't feel familiar with or at home with. Seasons, actual winter, spring, summer, fall, affect us as whole persons. And seasons are about more than the weather. So, word nerd moment, because we have to have those, don't we? This thing that we call a global pandemic, this time that we're in, this shut down the world, stay at home time, that's something that we could use a word like season for as well. We could use a word like season for that whole experience. In fact, here's the word nerdy part. If we looked up season in the Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary, which I did, the first definition of several would be this one. It would say season. A time characterized by a particular circumstance or feature. Now, I think global pandemic fully meets the criteria for particular circumstance. That feels a little obvious to me. And as is often the case with the weather, the season we're in can have quite an impact on how we feel, including what we feel is going on for us spiritually. As with lots of things spiritual, how we understand or explain what is happening to us is directly connected to who we understand ourselves to be relative to the mysteries that surround us. So how we think of ourselves in the context of things that confound us is a really, really important part of how we explain what is happening to us. So in a setting like this one, like the table, the idea of God is an important aspect of that for lots of folks, because who God is has a lot to say to lots of us about who we think humans are and what our context is. Now, so are ideas like mystery, source of all, love, life, energy, source of connection, love, goodness, creator, force that influences us toward beauty, meaning, and morality, unknowable and unsearchable, yet a being who invites all of existence to know and search. Those are all different ways that people in this community of the table answered the question, what do you mean when you say God? If I missed your particular answer, like if you were there when we did this exercise together and you just didn't hear your answer now, it's not because it didn't meet some mysterious mark or, you know, measure a criteria of some kind. It's just because when I was making my list, I missed it. Maybe all of that is why we feel so compelled to search for the meaning of a particular circumstance like the one that we're presently in. We want to place the experience into a wider context, into some setting that's going to help it feel less random. I'm intrigued by how many people seem to get kind of unusually religious when they're attempting to probe the meaning of things that can cause us distress or discomfort or even suffering and pain. And so to hear somebody in a time like this say, who's responsible for this, God or the devil, is actually not a bizarre way to hear somebody frame the question. And of course, you pretty much can't throw a rock these days without hitting some television preacher who's claiming the power of something or other over COVID-19 and declaring the pandemic over. So far, that seems to be enjoying about the same success rate as predicting the end of time by taking a few Bible verses and doing, you know, strange amateur mathematics with them. By the way, if I just trampled on your belief system, let's chat. Maybe let's not do it right now. Let's do it after this is done. But I should warn you that in this particular case, I'm going to be hard to convince, that claiming the power of something over COVID-19 is going to make this pandemic suddenly be over. Anyway, here's the question. Why does it seem less common to me to hear the question, who do you think is responsible for this, you or me, than it is for me to hear the question, who's responsible for this, God or the devil? Or even just a question like, how do the ways that we live on this earth contribute to a season like this? How did they contribute to it being here in the first place? How do they contribute to how we go through it together? Maybe one of these questions feels more common than the other because it's a lot easier to hand big messes like this off to the divine or to some cosmic force. When we do that, we can just stay stuck in the anger stage of grief and never have to do the work of moving through it and onward acceptance and doing what we can. We can just stay mad because we're not mad at ourselves. I'm going to pause right here and circle back for just a moment to something we explored together last week, which was viewing this pandemic and our feelings about it through the lens of grief. Because there are always new folks that are joining this group every week, by the way. If you're new, welcome. It's good to have you. Just a quick recap of that. You can always go back and watch the video. But last week, in this part of our time together, we explored some of grief expert David Kessler's thoughts about how considering our feelings during this pandemic through the lens of the five stages of loss and grief can help us put some handles on it, maybe put some language around those strong feelings. And if you missed that, there's a full article on Harvard Business Review. So if you look up Harvard Business Review in the article, it's entitled, I think it's called These Feelings You're Having Could Be Grief, or it's related to that. You'll find it right away. Anyway, that's what we were drawing on. Now, what we really didn't get into in that exploration was some of the practical sort of implications of all of that. One really important part of what Kessler's talking about is that when strong feelings get stirred up in us because we're either losing things we value or we're afraid we might lose them, we might start out feeling like we're in denial and then we become angry. But as we move through the stages of loss and grief, we move through different emotions, including sadness. And it's at this point, when he's talking about sadness, that Kessler kind of pauses in explaining the model to remind us that unless we take the time to feel those feelings, to actually stop and acknowledge them and let them sink in, we can't move on. Because our strong feelings, our emotions, come in no small part from our bodies, if we don't stop to feel them, first of all, it's useless to resist them. Something's going to give. But if we don't stop to feel them with our bodies as well as with our minds and our spirits, what happens is they stay stuck there in our bodies and they don't move on. But if we do take the time, our feelings can do their work and then move on, and they can make room for the next feeling that's to come. And Kessler talks about how sometimes we don't want to do this because we're afraid that there's a gang of feelings out there, and that if we even crack the door open to one, the whole gang is going to rush in, they're going to take up residence by force, they're going to just take over and they're not going to leave. But that is not how it actually works. If we stop and feel the feeling, I'm feeling sad, just give me 5 minutes to go feel sad. If we do that work, then the feeling can move out of our body in a more orderly fashion instead of staying stuck in there and coming out in a disordered way, often ways that affect our health, physical health, as well as our mental health. So let's plug this into the idea of seasons and how they can affect how we feel, including how we feel spiritually, and how that can impact our sense of connection to what is beyond us, whatever language we use for that. Now, this is where we get to the poetry part, so if you need more coffee, you know, now's the time. I have referenced the poet George Herbert here before. I wouldn't say that Herbert is a favorite poet of mine, mostly because I find him sort of too dour and pessimistic in his overall view of human-divine relationships. His God is pretty mean sometimes. Having said that, I find myself drawn back to his poetry over and over again, and there are a couple of reasons that I can discern about that. One is that he is often numbered among the greatest metaphysical poets. That is, someone who is drawn as a poet to that branch of philosophy that tries to describe things that are beyond the physical description of human existence. That's something that I really enjoy trying to do as well and working with as well, and so that's part of his appeal to me, is that I feel like, although he does it in a remarkably beautiful, erudite, substantial way that I don't have access to directly, we're trying to mess with the same stuff, and that just draws me back in. And the other thing that draws me back in is that his poetry is just so incredibly fun to read. Now, that whole sentence just bounced right off some of you, and that's fine. You would say something was incredibly fun to do that I would be sure I would be looking at sideways and going, really? And so this is just part of the human story. But I find it incredibly fun to read because it's full of wit and intriguing use of language. And it feels like, and I think most good art does this, like there are these spaces between, in this case, between the words, that are filled up with possibilities, but I'm not being told what I must think about those possibilities. There's just space made for me to engage, and that for me is a stimulating and an exciting space to be in. So I end up coming back over and over again. Anyway, Herbert has this interesting poem called The Flower, in which he describes how the changing of the seasons impact his moods, and in turn, how that impacts his sense of connection with what is beyond him. Now, at the point in his life, Herbert had an interesting story. He died very young, he was never well, but he was a scholar, an educator, a parliamentarian, somebody who was part of the court of the day, and then he left all of that and became a country priest, and for the rest of his life was the priest of this small parish. And it was in that context of his work as a parish priest that he wrote his poetry, and never published it, but handed it off to someone basically on his deathbed and said, if these could be, you know, of comfort to some poor soul, I think her language to that effect, then, you know, go ahead and share them. And if you don't think that of them, then just burn them all. Fortunately for all of us, you know, that's not what happened. They didn't get burned. They got published and were reprinted and reprinted and reprinted, and the resonance goes on. Anyway, during that season of his life where he is a Christian priest, he does all this writing. So, not surprisingly, his conception of the divine is represented in his work with pretty traditional language for God and pretty traditional concepts about God. If those are not the language or concepts that resonate for you, don't let that throw you off. Just remember that George Herbert is reaching for what is beyond what he can know in the purely physical realm, but he's using that realm that we can all see to try to describe that realm of mystery. So I think there's a fair bit of resonance for any, you know, spiritually attenuated or seeking person in there. Now, this particular poem is 7 stanzas long, but I'm just going to plunder a couple of lines from the first 2 stanzas. It's easy to find online if you want to read the whole thing. George Herbert, The Flower. You'll bump into it right off the bat. The poem starts out really up. And in stanza 1, it's spring. The poet feels great. The poet feels like the weather felt earlier this week. And he says it's like when this season is happening, this weather season is happening, it's like his own connection to God is refreshed as well. He writes, "How fresh, O Lord, how sweet and clean are thy returns, even as the flowers in spring." If you read it too fast, it sounds a little bit like Bugs Bunny, you know, that April showers may come my way, they bring up flowers that bloom in May, or however the song goes, right? That whole little, it sounds a little bit Disney-ish as poetry. It helps if you can see the early English that it's written in. But anyway, "How fresh, O Lord, how sweet and clean are thy returns, even as the flowers in spring." And so his spirit is waking up and feeling like scrubbed and new and fresh and alive because it's spring. And so this is a connection, right? And then later in the same stanza, he kind of augers in. I mean, it doesn't take Herbert very long to do this usually in his poems. He kind of gets right into the, you know, the heavy-duty stuff because that's kind of the guy I think he was. He kind of digs in and he writes this. Same stanza, okay, where he's just written about fresh and sweet and clean and flowers and just, right? And then he writes this. "Grief melts away like snow in May, as if there were no such cold thing." And someone in my spirit just goes, "Ah, that is so good." Who doesn't want to feel that way, right? Like when you can first take off your heavy coat and sit on the front steps and you feel like the sunshine isn't bouncing off you or getting blown away by a cold wind, it's hitting your body and it's soaking right into the core of you. When we feel like that in our bodies, even a feeling like grief feels harder to remember. That is quite a contrast in this poem to the second stanza, in which the poet says a couple of things that I think can speak fairly directly to the season that we're in terms of global season. I want to read that stanza in its entirety. "Who would have thought my shriveled heart could have recovered greenness? It was gone, quite underground, as flowers depart to see their mother root when they have blown. Were they together all the hard weather, dead to the world, keep house unknown." Let me unpack that just a little wee bit. What about you in this time, this pandemic, this will spring ever really come season? How does your heart feel? How does yourself feel? How does, if you think of self as synonymous with soul, how does your soul feel? Does it feel like it's in danger of shriveling up with anxiety or fear or loneliness or sadness? Does it, when it feels like that, does it get hard to imagine anything ever being different than that? Who would have thought my shriveled heart could have recovered greenness. It was gone. I think we can probably all relate to that, at least to some degree. And here's the part that I find most inspiring. In Herbert's imagination, in that stanza, when his heart feels shriveled and gone underground, what is happening out of view? What is going on in whatever place the heart goes to when it feels like it's battered, dead, or, to use his word, blown? This is lovely. The heart, says Herbert, has gone, quote, to see their mother root, close quote. Not dead at all, as it turns out, but weathering the hard weather, looking for all the world like it will never return, but in fact, keeping house unknown with stronger forces than winter in anticipation of spring. Did that track? Is that a followable idea? Sometimes I read these lines in Herbert, and what comes to mind is the Hebrew poet in Psalm 139 addressing himself to his notion of God and saying, it doesn't matter where I go, you're there. I can be in a season that feels fresh, clean, connected to whatever I understand to be ultimate or real or good or love or God. And I can be in a season like that, and I can feel that connection, you're there. I can be in a season where I feel like I'm disjointed, disconnected, dying, maybe even dead to the world around me, but it turns out I'm just keeping house with my spiritual root, because even there, you are there. The psalmist uses the images of heaven and Sheol, place of the dead, place of perfection, a place of hope and beauty, and a place of, you know, the end of all things good. If I go to this place that's beautiful and feels great and like an endless celebration and renewal and joy and all that good stuff, you're there. And if I go to a place that's just, my imagination says, is the end of everything, my feelings say is the end of all that is good, and there's no coming back from this place, you're there. And to me, that feels both beautiful and authentically hopeful. And my deep hope is that it feels that way to you as well. And since the snow is blowing past the window outside the room that I'm in, and I had to, you know, relaunch the snowblower this morning from what I thought was its summer sleep, can we talk about spring? Spring, my friends, will come. And grief, having been named and felt, grief will melt away like snow in May, as if there were no such cold thing. Grace and peace and hope to all of you. I look forward to us celebrating whatever season we're in, when we're next together, and to journeying together however we can in this season.